Astronomy Slot, bringing the wonders of the universe a little closer to home. And joining us once again, as usual, is David Moore, who's editor of Astronomy Ireland. David, you're very welcome to Kilkenny Today again.
Ah, thank you very much, Eugene.
Now, David, before we get into what we're going to talk about, Brendan O'Brien rang us in on 056-7762-777, and he said that an awful lot of stars are steady and also stars moving, for example, a shooting star. He wants to know, what is a shooting star?
Well, in a word, it's a misnomer. They're not stars at all, but they do look like stars shooting across the sky, and ancient peoples didn't know any different. But in fact, they're bits of space debris, probably bits off comets or asteroids that have smashed into each other millions of years ago and are floating around the solar system. And you don't realize, but right now you and I are moving at 66,000 miles an hour around the sun. So if we hit anything, it's like bugs splatting on your windscreen traveling down a motorway. They not only splat on our atmosphere, but they actually vaporize the air around them and produce these fiery streaks. So it's a bit of space debris burning up harmlessly high in the atmosphere, way above where even jet airplanes go, so not even any danger to them.
Now, so there you are, Brendan. I hope that has cleared that up for you. Well, that, and thanks indeed for that, David. Now, David, tonight's online lecture is called Warping Space and Time. It sounds like something straight out of a science fiction movie, but it's rooted in real physics. What can people expect to learn, and why is this topic so fascinating?
Yes, it is like science fiction, and it's all really linked back to Albert Einstein and his theory of relativity, because back for about 400 years, Isaac Newton's theory of gravity and how the planets move ruled supreme. And then in the early 1900s, Einstein came out with this idea that it's not as simple as you think. Space and time are actually part of the one fabric, and they can warp each other. So time can speed up or slow down, depending on gravity, and space can be bent. And it's really the bending of space-time, a crazy way that the human mind can't really visualize, but we can do the mathematics behind it and make predictions. And this was famously done in the 1919 eclipse. We've got a total eclipse coming up next month, very close to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are off to Spain to watch it. And they had one in 1919 in the South Atlantic and South America. And they dispatched an expedition to measure to see, did the light of stars passing near the edge of the sun get bent, like Einstein said, or like Newton said? And it turned out Einstein was right. And remember, 1919, the Germans, Einstein, more or less, and the English had had this First World War, basically, and they weren't popular with each other at the time. So for a 400-year theory of an Englishman to be overturned by a German was big news at the time. That's probably the reason why Einstein got catapulted to public fame, because there were lots of other scientists doing lots of interesting things around that time as well, but Einstein got all the fame and glory. And this warping of space is the kind of thing that Dr. Stephen Barrett, who's a brilliant public speaker, will be explaining to, in simple terms, to people who have no scientific training. That's what these public lectures every month are about. Get a scientist who's good at explaining things to the public to do so with no mathematics or crazy jargon.
And who, and David, who's given this lecture tonight?
Well, Steve Barrett is a physicist, old professional scientist from the University of Liverpool. And he also has a keen interest in astronomy since he was a kid. So he knows what it's like to start out knowing nothing and progress up to the upper echelon. So you can ask him, I think, any question under the sun or beyond, and he's the kind of man who should answer it. He's given several talks to us in the past, two of our Christmas lectures, the start of the universe, the end of the universe, the Star of Bethlehem mystery, and now this one about warping space and time. And, you know, there are I think we've proved. We use Einstein's theory in the GPS satellites, which you and I lives and listeners depend on, because it's only the logistics of being able to ship food all around the planet that enables 8 billion humans to exist on this rock. We shouldn't have that many people. It's technology that does it for us. GPS is extremely important. If all the satellites were shot down tomorrow, it's reckoned the supermarket shelves will be empty within 3 days. And what would you do then? So if GPS didn't allow for this warping of space and time, it wouldn't work. So it has a practical application as well. And that's the science fiction you talked about earlier. What about warp drives? You know, how technically possible are those? Do the mathematics allow for it? And then, I'm pretty sure they do, by the way, but we'll let Steve explain for sure. But the technology is not there yet. So it's a long way off Star Trek.
And tell me, about those wormholes and warp drives. One could ask, are they simply entertaining concepts for films? Or is there a genuine scientific theory behind them that researchers are now beginning to take seriously?
Well, the whole idea of warp drives is probably way beyond our capability. And some people think it won't actually be possible in this universe anyway. And this is the kind of thing the top scientists are debating, and we just wait to hear what they all agree on and then explain it to us in simple terms. And that's how we learn stuff. But, for instance, the idea of time dilation, which is that there's a famous twin paradox, whereby if there's two identical twins, born obviously the same day, head off into space, one goes into orbit around the black hole, which has extreme gravity. Time will slow down for that twin. They can orbit it for decades could pass for the twin that's not near the black hole. They both come back to Earth, or one stays on Earth. And the twin that went around the black hole is now a lot younger, perhaps almost the same age compared to the twin that stayed on the Earth. And this actually happens. If people, we're going to talk about the International Space Station in a moment. They're above the Earth's gravity, but a bit further from the center of the Earth than we are. And time goes at a different rate for those. Now, it turns out over a mission, it's about a thousandth of a second. Not really noticeable. Yeah. With black holes, it can become years.
Yeah. And we'll remind people about that, the details of that lecture just before the end of the program, Stephen. So don't be worrying about what time it's on.
It's
already
on in an hour and a bit's time. We'll come back to it.
You needn't worry, David. We'll remind people exactly what time it's on at the end of the program here as well. Now, speaking of the International Space Station, at the moment it has 7 astronauts, but another 3 are due to arrive, bringing the total to 10. Tell us what's the story around that. Where are they coming from? Why are they coming up there now?
Yeah, this is the new crew that come up. They usually hand over to one of the old crews. It's usually 2 crews on ISS at any one time. There are 7 people. Typically, a crew is 3, sometimes 4. And the new crew are due to launch tomorrow. I think it's around 3 p.m. And they'll take 3 hours to get to the space station, if all goes well. We're sort of hoping nothing catastrophic happens. Mm. It'd be nice if there was a delay, because they'll dock around 6 o'clock if all goes well. It's still bright in Ireland.
Of course.
But if it lasts till 10, 11 o'clock, we might see a spaceship. And these new 3 people, 1 NASA, 2 Russians, imagine the Americans and the Russians doing a mission together in today's political climate.
Well, isn't it brilliant to see?
They could learn a lot from what cooperation is all about and doing positive things. The NASA astronaut's going to be studying the effect of, he's doing medical tests. He's actually a medical doctor, he's a military medical doctor, but he's doing medical tests up there and how microgravity affects blood flow and augmented reality, things that will have applications down on the Earth.
Yes.
The 2 Russians, their research is not made so public. But again, it's usually civilian type of stuff, not military stuff that gets done on the ISS. And then one of the old crews will return on July 28th. And we'll be able to see ISS until July 13th. So we definitely won't see their space chase. But there's going to be 10 people on the space station from tomorrow night, all going well, till we lose it on July 23rd.
Yeah, because it's going to be visible over Ireland for the next 10 days. And someone who's never looked looked for it before, what's the easiest way to find it, David?
Well, we've had great weather recently. I've been watching it most nights.
Yeah.
I saw it last night. It was by far the brightest thing in the sky. It moves, it's doing 28,000 kilometres an hour. It moves about the speed that high-flying jet aircraft cross the sky. So it takes several minutes. Our question about shooting stars and meteors earlier on, they'll zip across the sky in a second or less. That's not the space station. If it takes several minutes to drift slowly and gracefully across the sky, that's the most expensive object ever built, about $150 billion worth of space hardware, with 7 people on it tonight, 10 tomorrow night, different time every night. So we issue the times on our social media.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a pen and people have got a pen and paper handy, 10:51 p.m. tonight is when it's highest from Ireland. And if you stay up late, fly over again hour and a half later, after going all the way around the world, at 12:28 a.m. And last week, you know, it gets the nights are so short, and the sun's just barely below the horizon, so the ISS was visible several times. And I saw it four times in one night last week, and it was Wednesday night.
Wow.
And we published all that on our social media. Anybody else who was crazy enough to stay up till dawn could have done the same.
And now, David, later this week, we're going to see one of the most beautiful sights in the evening sky, when with Venus appearing very close to a thin crescent moon. Why is that conjunction so spectacular?
Well, that's because these are the two brightest objects in the night sky. The only thing that outshines the moon, Venus, is the sun. So for the two brighter things lined, that's special. Now, Venus is fairly low in the west, but you know, you'll see it from almost sunset on. I think sunset's around 10. I timed it the other night, and 20 minutes after the sunset, I could go out and scan the western sky where the twilight was very bright and pick it up within 20 minutes fairly easily. So certainly by 10:30 you should be seeing it, and it'll stay up till 11:30. So between 10:30 and 11 is a great time to see it. And the crescent moon, it's a beautifully thin banana-shaped crescent moon that we'll see on Friday night.
Yeah.
So Venus will be to the upper right of the moon. If you get Astronomy Island magazine, there's a nice diagram in there showing you exactly what the scene will look like. But it is low in the west, so make sure you've got no trees, buildings, or anything towards the west, or find somewhere with nice, clear western horizon. Bring the whole family. And you know, it's a Friday night, not a school night.
And you can photograph with a smartphone, I'm sure, can you?
That's it, exactly, yeah. And smartphones can get fooled at night when it's white dots on a black background. That's not what they were meant for. Some of them do have night mode. But the twilight means you're just shooting an ordinary scene. You probably actually get the horizon in the field of view as well. So they are going to work beautifully.
Okay.
And they should be able to show up even the faint side of the moon glowing dimly with sunlight reflected off the Earth. We call it Earth shine. You can actually see the dark side of the moon glowing faintly as well, especially if you push your camera a bit. But at least you get the crescent and Venus together. It's a beautiful picture. If you think it's nice, do send it into Astronomy Island magazine. We'd love to publish it. Even smartphone pictures are great sometimes.
Now, David, people are already talking about next month's deep partial solar eclipse. What makes this eclipse particularly significant for Ireland? And just remind listeners, because we will get to remind them again next week, what they need to know about viewing it safely in that.
Yeah, well, looking at the sun is dangerous, even if it's 98% coverage, which it will be on August the 12th. There's a new moon this week, and the next new moon is the new moon that's going to cause this eclipse. 98% of the sun will be covered, although it won't go dark and you won't see stars in the daytime sky like you do at a total eclipse. It will get dimmer. It looks, I think, like it's evening time, even though the sun should be high in the sky, but the moon's covering most of it. And the sliver that's left, you look at that, you can damage your eyesight. Get the eclipse glasses. We won't see an eclipse deeper than this until we actually get a real total eclipse in Kerry and Cork in 2090. So make the best of this one. And the one that was this good was 1999. Some of the listeners might remember it. August the 11th, 1999. We had 2,000 people in the Phoenix Park with us watching it on a glorious day.
And David, for someone who's inspired by these events, I mean, the summer that we're having right now, it's probably the best summer to get involved in getting an interest and partaking in astronomy, isn't it?
Yeah, on the technical side, a star exploded in a galaxy about 50 million light years away, and they need a big telescope to see it. But I've been able to see it, and 2 days after it exploded, everyone in the world in this area knew about it, and I was able to go out and take a picture of it. Sometimes I'd have to wait a week, and it could be gone by then. So having clear nights most nights is something we're not used to in
Absolutely.
Ireland. Oh, and by the way, the nights are very short, but the days are long. And if you want those eclipse glasses, get them off the website soon, because on the day, things go berserk, and we can't cope with demand.
Absolutely.
So get them well in advance.
And
they've made it clear. Skies continue.
Yeah, and very briefly, just on Saturn, you were up before dawn looking at Saturn this morning. What can early risers expect to see over the coming weeks?
Yeah, well, on Saturn, We just mentioned the magnet. It's coming to the morning sky. If you like getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you'll easily see it with the naked eye. Probably the best time is to wait till it's closer to the moon in a couple of weeks' time when it'll act as a signpost. Because unlike Venus, that outshines everything in the sky, Saturn's about as bright as the brightest stars in the sky. So if you're a beginner, how will you know which one it is? Well, the moon is a handy signpost. So we'll tell people more about that in 2 weeks' time, because that week will include the Saturn-Moon alignment.
Okay, and very briefly, David, just remind people about tonight's lecture, Warping Space and Time, times and everything, how people get involved.
Yep, it's on at 7 p.m. on Zoom online, so everybody in Kilkenny and the whole country can watch in from the comfort of their own home. Just go to astronomy.ie, you'll see it featured there. Get a ticket, it'll send you automatically the Zoom link, and enjoy the talk. If you miss it, you're not free at 7 o'clock, we actually record it, so you can still order a ticket, and we send you the recording sometime tomorrow.
Okay, and
so,
it's,
you know, if you're fascinated by space tonight, it's a big night.
Tickets are a fiver, are they, or what are they?
Yeah, they're €5 to members, paid-up members.
Okay.
€10 for a whole family can watch it on the website. You'll see all the details there, and a lot more details of the talk and the speaker, Steve Barrett.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a technical subject, but it's going to be put at a very simple level. That's how we brief the speakers.
I'll have to leave it there, David. David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine, thank you as always for joining us. If you'd like to watch tonight's online lectures, Warping Space and Time, it gets underway at 7 p.m. and is open to everyone. Wherever you are in Ireland, you'll find ticket information, details of the lecture, daily International Space Station viewing times, information on the upcoming solar eclipse, and much more at astronomy.ie. David, thanks for joining us. And that brings us to the end of the